Broadcasting fee, and the opinions expressed during the show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WGCH Radio.
Welcome to Food for Thought, sponsored by Carlson Laboratories. Listen now as your host, Jolie Root, sifts through medical research and expert opinions for practical advice to help you take control of your health naturally and live well every day. And now, here's Jolie Root.
Good morning and welcome to Food for Thought. We're going to get right to the news. And as the United States heads into flu season, Americans can't let up in the fight against the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. According to the National Institutes of Health and the division, the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases, although the number of new daily cases of coronavirus has slowly been declining over the last 2 weeks, we are still closing in on almost 200,000 deaths from COVID-19 and more than 6 million confirmed infections. Although we only have 4% of the population of the planet, we have 25% of the COVID-19 deaths. So we're not managing very well. We need to hunker down and get through this fall and winter because it's not going to be easy. The director of National Institutes of Allergies and Infectious Diseases told a panel of doctors from Harvard Medical School. He also spoke about the COVID-19 vaccine trials and the possibility of post-Labor Day surges, noting that as one region in the U.S. gets it under control, another hot spot emerges and that spikes inevitably appear whenever states or local municipalities lift their social distancing restrictions. It's really quite frankly depressing to see that because you know what's ahead. He also warned about the dangers of underestimating the virus, comparing the pandemic to the early days of HIV when the epidemic started with a few gay men to decades later with tens of millions of deaths and more than 70 million people who have been infected. We've been through this before. Don't ever, ever underestimate the potential of this pandemic. And don't try and look at the rosy side of things. We really have to realize that we don't know it all, and we have to be flexible enough to change recommendations, guidelines, policies, depending upon the information. The vaccine trials are progressing very well, and there it's more likely, though, that the vaccine will be ready in 2021 and not by the end of this year. We're also not talking about second surges because we're still in the first surge. There is optimism, though, about the flu season. Australia goes through it before we do because they're down under and they have winter when we have summer. They've experienced the lightest influenza season in memory due to the social distancing measures that have been put in place for COVID-19. It's unclear whether the United States will have similar luck, but that is something to think about. If we keep social distancing in place and wear our masks when we are in proximity with other people, we will downplay not just the likelihood of being infected from COVID-19, but also influenza. Now, there was a very interesting, to me, because this is in my lane, headline this week, vitamin D deficiency may raise the risk of getting COVID-19, according to a study that was conducted at the University of Chicago Medicine. Vitamin D is important to the function of the immune system, and vitamin D supplements have previously been shown to lower the risk of viral respiratory tract infections. The statistical analysis suggests that this may be true also for the COVID-19 infection. They looked at 489 University of Chicago Medicine patients whose vitamin D level was measured within a year before being tested for COVID-19. Patients who had a vitamin D deficiency, meaning that their levels were below 20 nanograms per milliliter, and that was not treated, were twice as likely to test positive for the COVID-19 coronavirus compared to patients who had sufficient levels of the vitamin. The study association of vitamin D status and other clinical characteristics with COVID-19 test results was published September 3rd in JAMA Network Open. Half of Americans are deficient in vitamin D, with much higher rates of vitamin D deficiencies seen in African Americans, Hispanics, and individuals who live in areas like Chicago and like New York, where it is difficult to get enough sun exposure in winter. Understanding whether treating vitamin D deficiency changes COVID-19 risk could be of great importance locally, nationally, and globally. Vitamin D is inexpensive and generally very safe to take and can be widely scaled. We need experimental studies to determine whether vitamin D supplementation can reduce the risk and potentially severity of COVID-19. So that's encouraging. It is coming. Flu season is coming, and the pandemic is already here. If you're not already making sure that your vitamin D levels are in the normal range, now is the time to begin moving in that direction. A vitamin D test is inexpensive, and it is often covered by your insurance. It's a simple blood draw. If you're going in anyway for your flu shot, you can ask for blood work and get your vitamin D level tested so that you can make sure that you're in the normal range. The normal range for vitamin D ranges between 30 and 100 nanograms per milliliter. The name of the test that you want is 25-OHD. And in order for most people of adult body weight to be in the normal range with vitamin D, you probably will need somewhere around 4,000 to 5,000 international units of vitamin D on a regular basis. But vitamin D supplements are widely available and very inexpensive. So don't let yourself, of all years, this is the year to not let yourself have a deficiency of vitamin D. Another headline that I saw out of University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill was interesting to me. Obesity is linked with higher risk for COVID-19 complications. This study raises concern that the COVID-19 vaccine will be less effective for those with obesity. From COVID-19 risk to recovery, the odds are stacked against those who are obese. And a new study led by University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill raises concerns about the impact of obesity on the effectiveness of a future COVID-19 vaccine. Researchers examined the available published literature on individuals infected with the virus and found that those with a body mass index over 30, that's the definition of obesity, were at a greatly increased risk for hospitalization, 113% more likely to be hospitalized, 74% more likely to be admitted to the intensive care unit, and they had a higher risk of death, 48% higher, from the coronavirus. So again, that's a body mass index over 30. You can do your body mass index calculation by stepping on a scale and finding out what you weigh, and then get online and Google or Bing, whatever makes you happy, body mass index calculator, and you enter your weight and your height, and it will tell you what your BMI is. A team of researchers at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill's Gilling School of Global Public Health, collaborated with the senior author, who is a World Bank health and nutrition specialist, and the paper was published in Obesity Reviews. They reviewed immunological and biomedical data to provide a detailed layout of the mechanisms and pathways that link obesity with increased risk of COVID-19, as well as an increased likelihood of developing more severe complications from the virus. Obesity is already associated with numerous underlying risk factors for COVID-19, including high blood pressure, heart disease, type 2 diabetes, and chronic kidney and liver disease. Metabolic changes caused by obesity, such as insulin resistance and inflammation, make it difficult for individuals with obesity to fight some infections. This is a trend that can be seen in other infectious diseases like influenza and hepatitis. So we really want to pay attention to our weight during this upcoming flu and pandemic season also. And as you know, the healthy diet and getting out and getting 30 minutes a day of everyday exercise is a great way to get your body weight to normal. We're going out to our first set of messages. You're listening to Food for Thought, and I'm here on 1490 WGCH and on WGCH.com anywhere. I'll be right back.
Have you had your Carlson Norwegian fish oil today? Decades ago, scientists discovered why Greenland Eskimos maintain healthy hearts despite their high-fat diets. The high level of omega-3 oils in their seafood diet protected their hearts. Carlson Norwegian fish oil provides those important omega-3 oils. The same omega-3s from cold water fish support maximum brain power, immune strength, joint comfort, and our vision, too. Carlson, the very finest fish oil, is a valuable source of the important omega-3s EPA and DHA. Each teaspoon provides a full 1,600 milligrams of omega-3s. And its purity is guaranteed. Try it on salads and popcorn. It tastes like lemon, not fishy. As for Carlson, the very finest fish oil, at finer health food stores today. Why is vitamin D so important? Because it supports and promotes calcium absorption, healthy bones, healthy mood, cardiovascular health, and a healthy immune system. Are you getting enough vitamin D? It's important to us. Carlson features many products with vitamin D, including vitamin D soft gelatin capsules, liquid drops, and vitamin D in combination with fish oils. Carlson provides natural vitamin D3 to support healthy body levels of vitamin D. Ask for Carlson Vitamin D at finer health food stores today. Or go to CarlsonLabs.com to find the location of the store nearest you. Carlson is an easy way to get your vitamin D.
Welcome back to Food for Thought. Here's your host, Jolie Root.
We're back, and some other health that's in the news. For couples that are struggling to get pregnant, it may be worth taking a daily fish oil supplement. Researchers report that young men who take fish oil supplements appear to have better sperm quality and higher testosterone levels than those who don't. Because they have a better sperm count as a group, they would have a better chance of fertilizing an egg. This study was 1,700 men. It doesn't prove cause and effect between fish oil and fertility, but there's a reason to believe that the omega-3 fatty acids in fish oil had a direct effect. Sperm cells contain a high amount of omega-3s, so it makes sense that increasing your intake would lead to healthier sperm. Although this study included healthy 18 or 19-year-old men with no knowledge of their fertility, they expect to see the same effect in older men taking fish oil supplements. Two previous clinical trials found that older men had higher sperm counts after 14 weeks of eating nuts as a means of improving their omega-3 levels. Tart cherry improves endurance. Results assessed from 10 studies show that tart cherry concentrate may boost exercise performance by improving endurance. Scientists noted that tart cherries are beneficial for a couple of reasons. They have antioxidant and anti-inflammatory effects, and they boost muscle oxygenation during exercise by increasing the bioavailability of nitric oxide, which is a potent vasodilator. This analysis concludes that tart cherry may speed muscle recovery and even improve sleep in elite athletes. Research finds that aerobic exercise counters the effects of normal aging. It increases blood flow to the brain, which improves thinking and memory, even in long-time couch potatoes. And a regular bedtime is good for your heart. It's easier than ever to binge watch every season of your favorite TV show, but you might want to head to bed instead. Recent research shows that sticking to a consistent bedtime can help reduce the risk of heart problems. In the study, researchers assessed the link between a regular bedtime and resting heart rate. Those who went to bed later or earlier than normal had a higher resting heart rate, which is associated with an increased risk to cardiovascular health. Through the study, it was determined that even if you get 7 hours of sleep a night, if you're not going to bed at the same time every night, not only does your resting heart rate increase while you sleep, it carries over into the next day. Significant increases in resting heart rate occurred when participants went to bed between 1 hour and half an hour later than their normal bedtime. And the later a person went to bed at night, the higher the increase in resting heart rate. Researchers were surprised to find that going to bed earlier than usual was also associated with an increase. Retiring 30 minutes earlier had little effect, but more than 30 minutes earlier significantly increased resting heart rate. But in this case, the heart rate leveled out during sleep. For some, it may be a matter of maintaining their regular work week bedtime through the weekend. Establishing a healthy bedtime routine as best you can is obviously step number one, but sticking to it is just as important. The Mediterranean diet may cut risk of dementia. Eating a Mediterranean diet high in vegetables, fruit, whole grains, nuts, legumes, olive oil, and fish may reduce the risk of mental decline, suggests two studies from the U.S. National Eye Institute. We don't always pay attention to our diets, says the lead author. We need to explore how nutrition affects the brain and the eye. The researchers analyzed data from the Age-Related Eye Disease Study, ARIDS, and the follow-up study, ARIDS 2. The studies, which included 8,000 people, were designed to examine age-related macular degeneration. The first study tested participants' cognitive function at 5 years, and the follow-up tested mental function at the start and again at 2, 4, and 10 years later. Those who most closely followed the Mediterranean diet had the lowest risk of mental impairment. High levels of fish and vegetable consumption appeared to provide the greatest protection. Researchers conclude that these results clearly show that mental function and brain health depend on diet. The Mediterranean diet is linked to a reduced risk of heart disease, stroke, obesity, type 2 diabetes, and some cancers, and improved symptoms of rheumatoid arthritis and depression. Extra virgin olive oil is the primary source of fat in the Mediterranean diet. It's a rich source of heart-healthy antioxidants and monounsaturated fats. Prenatal folic acid also offers brain benefits. Supplementing with folic acid before conception and during early pregnancy is overwhelmingly linked to a reduced risk of neural tube defects in infants, but new research finds that the benefits extend into childhood. A study of children whose mothers took folic acid during their second and third trimesters showed that at age 7, the kids whose moms took 400 micrograms per day of folic acid had higher scores in word reasoning compared to children whose mothers received a placebo. In addition, the folic acid group scored higher for cognition as 3-year-olds. These results show the benefits of continuing folic acid supplementation throughout pregnancy. Now, the biggest risk factor for type 2 diabetes, obesity. Regardless of your family history, obesity seems to be the driving factor in developing type 2 diabetes, according to Danish researchers. Their study finds that obesity increases the risk of type 2 diabetes by at least 6 times, regardless of a person's genetic risk for this disease. That's important because a lot of times people feel that if they have a family history, meaning their parents or siblings or grandparents, have type 2 diabetes, that there's no way for them to avoid it. But what this is telling us is being obese is a stronger risk factor. So according to the American Diabetes Association, obesity is a well-known risk factor for type 2 diabetes, and these findings weren't surprising. Genetic variants, meaning your family history, only explains about 10 to 15% of type 2 diabetes risk. It is key to prevent obesity to begin with. Everyone needs to control their energy balance or avoid consuming more calories than you burn through physical activity. Previous studies have shown that losing even a little bit of weight can help people manage type 2 diabetes. It's not just losing the weight, though. Keeping it off is important. Losing a little bit of weight has so many benefits, even in other areas. Losing a little bit of weight really helps you to support blood pressure within the normal range. And losing a little bit of weight changes your lipid profile. It helps you to boost HDL. And the exercise that I talk about every single week, 30 minutes a day, no fail, also boosts HDL. And that 30 minutes a day, if you do it every single day, changes your trend toward obesity. It changes the way that you weigh. It changes your weight. So it's so important to be active, and walking is plenty good enough. You don't have to get out there and kill your hips and kill your knees on the pavement. It isn't necessary. And if you're older and you have some balance issues, running is a fall risk, but walking is generally something that most people can do safely. So the key to obesity is eating a healthy diet and getting regular activity. Teens need more exercise. According to the American Heart Association, only about 1 in 4 high school students get the recommended hour a day of exercise. See, for kids, for youngsters, for people under the age of 18, we don't say 30 minutes a day. We say an hour a day. It's really very important for our young people to be physically active. So 25% are doing that, 75% are not, and screen time is partially to blame, along with the absence of physical education programs in schools. Physically active children tend to be less obese and are less likely to develop hypertension, diabetes, and cardiac disease, and they're just better off. Their well-being is better. Physical activity is an important part of a child's life. A study 5 years ago found that girls as young as 7 developed harmful changes in blood flow after just 3 hours of uninterrupted sitting. The benefits of exercise aren't purely physical. Additional research found that 12-year-olds who get 60 minutes of exercise every day had an average of 10% reduction in depression at age 18. Federal guidelines recommend children and teens get at least an hour of moderate to vigorous activity every day, including more intense activities at least 3 times a week to keep bones and muscles strong. But even short activity breaks can improve productivity and concentration. Encourage children to be active by limiting screen time, giving them chores like yard work, do it with them, do it together as a family. Go for a walk after dinner, and schedule family activities like hiking or bowling. Exercise is important for people of all ages, and it's just critically important to keep people healthy. We need to move our bodies in order to maintain optimal health. Again, if you've been a couch potato, start walking. That's the place to start. That's something that you can do safely. I hear the music, which means it's time for another break. This is Food for Thought, and I'm Jolie Root. We are here on 1490 WGCH, and we'll be right back after these messages.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Mostly sunny and less humid for today with a high near 75. Clear and cool tonight. 46 to 54, and mostly sunny, cooler, low 70s tomorrow. On Sunday, showers, thunder showers developing, 75 to 80, and mostly sunny, seasonable, 75 to 80 Monday. Tuesday, sunny, unseasonably cool, 66 to 74. Just Bill Jack, women on 1490 and 105.5 WGCH.
It's hard to assure your kids are getting enough nutrients, especially those tricky omega-3s. Kids, in particular, need omega-3 oils in Carlson for Kids cod liver oil because they are crucial for brain and vision development, as well as cardiovascular health. Higher levels of omega-3 fats from fish support better learning. Carlson for Kids cod liver oil supplies 590 milligrams of omega-3 fatty acids in each serving. It has a delicious lemon flavor that kids love. It tastes great on its own or mixed in your child's favorite food or beverage. You can give your children Carlson for Kids cod liver oil with confidence because all Carlson fish oils are tested for purity, potency, and freshness by an independent FDA-registered laboratory. Look for the purity guarantee right on the label. Be sure your children are getting the omega-3s they need with Carlson for Kids cod liver oil. Look for it at your favorite natural food store today. Medical scientists worldwide are encouraging people to eat more fish. Most American diets are low in cold water fish that are abundant in important omega-3 oils. DHA and EPA are the vital components of fish oil that provide healthy benefits. Not only are they crucial for brain and vision development, they're very important for cardiovascular health. Carlson, America's leading Norwegian fish oil brand, specializes in both great-tasting soft gels that are easy to swallow and fish oil liquids that don't taste fishy. That's right, Carlson provides the most extensive line of fish oils to meet all your needs. You can take Carlson fish oils with confidence, for Carlson fish oils are tested for purity, potency, and freshness. Ask for Carlson Norwegian fish oils today. That's right. Ask for Carlson Norwegian fish oils today.
Welcome back to Food for Thought. Here's your host, Jolie Root.
I'm back, and I want to talk about meat. We've really just kind of come through one of the big cookout weekends of the year, but I want to talk about consuming red and processed meat, especially cooked at very high temperatures, as being the wrong recipe for heart disease. They found that consuming red and processed meat increased a protein compound that may increase the risk of heart disease, stroke, and complications in diabetes. This provides important dietary insights for people at risk of such degenerative diseases. When red meat is seared at high temperatures, such as grilling, roasting, or frying, it creates compounds called advanced glycation end products. The acronym for that is AGES. When they're consumed, they accumulate in your body and they interfere with normal cell functions. Consumption of high age foods can increase our total daily age intake by 25%, with higher levels contributing to vascular and myocardial stiffening, inflammation, and oxidative stress. This is the perfect storm for degenerative blood vessel and heart disease. Published in Nutrients, the study tested the impacts of two diets. One was high in red meat and processed grains, and the other was high in whole grains, dairy, nuts and legumes, and white meat cooked using steaming, boiling, stewing, and poaching cooking methods. It was found that the diet high in red meat significantly increased age levels in the blood, suggesting that it contributes to disease progression. Largely preventable, cardiovascular disease is still the number one cause of death globally. In Australia, it represents one in five of all deaths. The reason we're talking about Australia is because that's where the study was done. While there are still questions about dietary ages and how they're linked to chronic disease, this research shows that eating red meat prepared the way that I mentioned, so grilling, roasting, or frying, alters age levels. The message is pretty clear. If we want to reduce heart disease risk, we need to cut back on how much red meat we eat or be more considered about the way that we cook it. Frying, grilling, and searing may be the preferred cooking methods of top chefs, but this might not be the best choice for people looking to cut your risk of diseases. If you want to reduce your risk of excess ages, then slow-cooked meals could be a better option for long-term health. So it's a matter of how you cook as much as it is a matter of how you eat. And pressure cooking offers a way to cook meats without really dramatically increasing the production of these advanced glycation end products. Crock-pot cooking, where you put the roast in the crock-pot in the morning and you let it cook all day, low and slow, comes out extremely tender. Everyone knows what that pot roast smells like when you open up that pot. And that method of cooking would be a very low age or advanced glycation end products production method. And then they mentioned steaming or poaching, which is absolutely nice for things like chicken breasts because they're tender when they're done and not tough. So, you know, thinking about the method of preparation is something that can be very important. More than one drink a day, the American Heart Association and some other health associations are sort of reversing their stand on how much alcohol is healthy for men. For women, it's been one drink a day for years, not more than one drink a day for years. But for men, they said two was okay. Well, just a couple of weeks ago, a number of recommendations were decreased. So now we're saying one drink for men also because it was found that comparing two drinks a day to one drink a day, mortality was much higher in men that had more than one drink daily. So here is evidence that more than one drink a day may raise high blood pressure risk in adults with type 2 diabetes. This is the first large study to specifically investigate the association of alcohol intake and high blood pressure among adults with type 2 diabetes. This comes to us from Wake Forest. Previous studies have suggested that heavy alcohol consumption is associated with high blood pressure, but the association of moderate alcohol consumption with high blood pressure was unclear. So they examined the relationship between alcohol consumption and blood pressure in more than 10,000 adults with type 2 diabetes, average age 63, 61% of whom were male. And they were all participants in the Action to Control Cardiovascular Risk in Diabetes trial. We call it ACCORD. It's one of the largest long-term trials to compare different treatment approaches to reduce heart disease risk in adults with type 2 diabetes. It was conducted from 2001 to 2005 at 77 centers across the United States and Canada. All of the participants had type 2 diabetes for an average of 10 years prior to enrolling in the study. In addition to 10 years with type 2 diabetes, they were at increased risk for cardiovascular events because they had pre-existing cardiovascular disease, evidence of potential cardiovascular disease, or had at least two additional cardiovascular disease risk factors, such as high blood pressure, high cholesterol, smoking, or obesity. In this study, alcohol consumption was categorized as none, light, which was 1 to 7 drinks per week, moderate, which was 8 to 14 drinks per week, and heavy, which was 15 or more drinks per week. One alcoholic beverage was equivalent to a 12-ounce beer, a 5-ounce glass of wine, or a 1.5-ounce hard liquor serving. The number of drinks per week were reported by each participant. Blood pressure was categorized according to the 2017 American College of Cardiology, American Heart Association, and the normal was below 120 over 80. Elevated was 120 to 129, and less than 80. Stage 1 was 130 to 139. Stage 2 was 140 over 90 or higher. Most of the participants were already taking one or more blood pressure medications, so the analysis of the blood pressure readings was adjusted to account for the effects of the medications and to estimate the underlying degree of high blood pressure. The researchers found that light drinking was not associated with elevated blood pressure or either stage of high blood pressure. Moderate drinking was associated with increased risk of elevated blood pressure, 79% increase. Stage 1 high blood pressure by 66% and stage 2 by 62%. Heavy drinking was associated with increased risk of elevated blood pressure by 91%. The increase was 149% for stage 1 blood pressure. That's a 2.5-fold increase. Stage 2 high blood pressure by 204%, which is a 3.4-fold increase. And the more alcohol consumed, the higher the risk of severity of high blood pressure. Although light to moderate alcohol consumption may have positive effects on cardiovascular health in the general adult population, moderate and heavy alcohol consumption appears to be independently associated with higher risk of high blood pressure. So tempering alcohol consumption needs to be considered in patients with type 2 diabetes, especially if they're having trouble controlling their blood pressure. And this group is at very high risk because people with type 2 diabetes are at a higher cardiovascular risk. And alcohol consumption is associated with high blood pressure, so limited drinking is recommended. According to the American Heart Association, excessive drinking can increase the risk of high blood pressure. Type 2 diabetics are already at increased risk for high blood pressure. And for the general population, the association recommends that alcoholic beverages be consumed in moderation, if at all, and all drinkers need to understand the potential effects of alcohol on their health. Another thing that has been associated with high blood pressure is having heavy legs. Ultimately, what was noted in this study was a continued discussion of it's not just how much fat you have, but where the fat is located. Although we know confidently that fat around the waistline is detrimental to health, prior to this, the same could not be said for leg fat. But if you have fat around your legs, it's more than likely not a terrible thing, because fatter legs are actually linked to a reduced risk of high blood pressure. So the people that had higher percentages of leg fat were less likely than those with lower levels of fat to have all types of high blood pressure. It's so interesting because you would expect the opposite. Participants compared to those with lower percentages of leg fat, participants with higher percentages of leg fat were 61% less likely to have the type of high blood pressure where both numbers are elevated. Risk for participants with higher leg fat was 53% lower for diastolic blood pressure. That's the second number in the blood pressure reading. And 39% lower for systolic high blood pressure, the first number in the reading. So that it's just an interesting and kind of surprising finding that if you're carrying a lot of excess weight in your legs, it's nowhere near, according to blood pressure readings, as dangerous as having the apple shape, the excess weight in the middle. This is Food for Thought. I'm Jolie Root. We're going to go out to a few messages from my sponsor. You're listening to me on 1490 WGCH, and you can also listen on WGCH.com anywhere. I'll be right back.
Medical scientists worldwide are encouraging people to eat more fish. And most American diets are low in important omega-3 oils. Omega-3 oils are the vital components of fish that provide numerous health benefits. Carlson Elite Omega-3 Gems supply concentrated amounts of these omega-3 oils that are needed to support vision, brain function, and a healthy heart. Each great-tasting Carlson Elite Omega-3 Gem soft gel contains 1,250 milligrams of fish oil from deep, cold-water fish. That supplies a full 800 milligrams of omega-3s, all in only one easy-to-swallow soft gel. You can take Carlson fish oils with confidence, for they are tested for purity, potency, and freshness by an independent FDA-registered laboratory. Ask for Carlson Elite Omega-3 Gems at your favorite natural food retailer today. Healthy vision. It's important to us. Carlson Right for the Macula supplies the nutrients to promote healthy vision. Carlson Right for the Macula provides substantial amounts of nutrients, lutein and DHA, which are key to a healthy macula. And a healthy macula is vital to our healthy vision. High dietary intakes of lutein and DHA may protect our macula from harmful processes that diminish our central vision. Recent research suggests that taken together, lutein and DHA may work synergistically to maintain the health of our macula. Ask for Carlson Right for the Macula at finer health food stores today. Or go to CarlsonLabs.com to find the location of the store nearest you.
Welcome back to Food for Thought. Here's your host, Jolie Root.
I am back, and I saw an interesting report in Discover Magazine this week. It's about the latest supplement being touted as beneficial for COVID-19, and that is melatonin. I've talked about melatonin on the program. It's a hormone. The pineal gland in the brain produces melatonin, and it governs our sleep and wake cycles during the day and during the night. And you can get melatonin as a supplement. We use it for adjusting ourselves to a different time zone, those of us that have to travel east and west across multiple time zones. But melatonin is also used for a number of other health benefits. Well, this is a Texas physician that claims that he has treated hundreds of COVID-19 patients with everyone's favorite sleep aid. Now, there might be reasons to be wary of this hype. The long list of potential COVID-19 treatments that researchers have suggested has one more addition, and that's melatonin. The Texas doctor claims he's treated 400 COVID-19 patients with the hormone, with few individuals developing severe enough cases to require hospitalization. The announcement comes with no study to discern whether the supplement aided recovery or if this is just a coincidence, because a majority of COVID-19 cases don't need hospitalization. The treatment appears also to have provided vitamin C and vitamin D to patients as well. Neither one of those vitamins qualifies as a verified and scientifically backed COVID treatment, but their inclusion means that even if patient success was due to the supplements, melatonin might not be the only factor. Vague success claims aside, a handful of others have written about the possible ways that melatonin might reduce the severity of COVID infection, and there's currently a clinical trial running here in the U.S. to examine the possibility. At this time, though, intervention with melatonin is not well supported, according to a neurologist at the University of South Florida. More rigorous research is needed to determine whether the molecule does more than regulate the sleep-wake cycles. But melatonin often goes by its nickname, the sleep hormone. It is released by the pineal gland in the brain, and it helps prepare our bodies for sleep. Circulating levels of melatonin ramp up at night and drop off during the day. Melatonin supplements are sold under the premise that they help people sleep. We know that research indicates that melatonin probably does help with jet lag. When it comes to COVID-19, those suggesting that melatonin might benefit focus not on the way that melatonin helps us sleep, but how it interacts with the immune system. Research suggests that melatonin can help fight inflammation or the reactions that spring up in our bodies when our immune systems detect a problem. A certain degree of inflammation is helpful for healing, but the response can also become excessive, like when our bodies target plaque on blood vessel walls. Some healthcare experts are reporting to us that in COVID-19 patients, an overzealous immune response triggers health problems outside the lungs. For those that would be interested in pursuing melatonin as a COVID-19 infection aid, this is where the molecule comes in, according to a researcher that studies the aging process at University of Texas Health Science Center at San Antonio. This doctor has written several articles about the potential melatonin might have, and he and colleagues in the Philippines published a paper where 10 hospitalized COVID-19 patients saw symptoms improved after a few days of taking supplements. Other researchers suggest that if melatonin is helpful during the pandemic, it might be for specific neurological issues. Compared with, say, the flu, COVID might be more likely to cause strokes. And in pre-pandemic times, researchers found that sleep disorders increase the risk for strokes as well as chronic inflammation. So it's possible to follow the logic and propose that if melatonin helps sleep or reduces inflammation, then the hormone might also be helpful for preventing strokes, and maybe some COVID-19 patients could reduce their risk of brain damage if they take the supplement. But so far, again, research doesn't exist that validates those conclusions. It might be kind of a leap right now to make that connection. So we've got a lot more to learn. If you already take melatonin because you use it to improve your sleep or because you understand that melatonin has some relationship with blocking chronic inflammation or supporting better immune response, then by all means keep doing it. But it's too early to say whether melatonin is something that is going to be, you know, a legitimate treatment for COVID patients. I want to talk a little bit about the way that some nutraceuticals improve some of the characteristics of cardiovascular disease. And there are a lot of different factors that we look at when we have dyslipidemia, meaning elevated cholesterol and other factors that are known to be underlying characteristics of cardiovascular disease. So one of those factors is inhibition of LDL oxidation. So let me explain what I mean by that. When you go get a cholesterol test, they measure total cholesterol, LDL, and HDL, and in some cases VLDL, the very low-density lipoprotein. But there is research that shows that LDL itself, while we do want to keep it within what we think is a healthy range, a healthy level, it really becomes much more dangerous when it is oxidized. So preventing oxidation of LDL is one of the ways that cardiologists who practice integrative medicine using medications and nutraceuticals and diet in order to help their patients become healthier, preventing the oxidation of LDL or inhibiting the oxidation of LDL is something that improves the health of people. So what are the nutrients? There's quite the list of nutrients that help to inhibit LDL oxidation. Now, you start with vitamin E and coenzyme Q10. Coenzyme Q10 is an antioxidant. We especially want people who are taking statin medications to take coenzyme Q10. Some people who take statins to lower their cholesterol get some pretty significant side effects with statins. Muscle weakness is one of them. And when we replenish, see, what happens with statins is they deplete coenzyme Q10, and coenzyme Q10 is necessary for the production of ATP, and that helps to keep muscles strong. So when we use statins, we need to replace the coenzyme Q10. So CoQ10, vitamin E, those are important for protecting LDL from the damage from free radicals. But so are niacin. So is green tea, or a supplement of green tea extract. Pantothene helps to inhibit the oxidation of LDL. I'm going to go through quite a list here. You don't need to take all of these things, but you probably, if you have elevated LDL, you probably want to be taking a few of them. Resveratrol. Using olive oil to cook with, and avocados, because monounsaturated fats protect against the oxidation of LDL, curcumin, pomegranate, and pomegranates are in season right now, and you can eat the little nibs, but you can also drink pomegranate juice all year long. And if you have dyslipidemia, if you have high cholesterol, high LDL, maybe even low HDL, pomegranate juice, 8 ounces a day, is a really important thing to consider doing. Garlic, sesame, lycopene, glutathione, polycosinol, all of those things inhibit LDL oxidation. There's so many things we can do with nutrients to protect the health of our hearts and blood vessels. That's it for me. I'm out of time. I thank you for spending time with me today and listening to me here on 1490 WGCH. And I'll be back with you same time next week with more good information for your health. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Food for Thought, sponsored by Carlson Laboratories, with your host, Jolie Root. Tune in again next time as Jolie sifts through medical research and expert opinions for practical advice to help you take control of your health naturally and live well every day. Food for Thought.
AM 1490 and FM 105.5 WGCH Greenwich.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
It's been 19 years since the September 11th terrorist attacks, and President Trump and the First Lady and former VP Joe Biden are at the United Flight 93 Memorial in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, while Vice President Mike Pence is at memorials going on in Lower Manhattan and in the nation's capital, where terrorist hijackers crashed American Flight 77 into the West Wall of the Pentagon that day. Joint Chiefs of Staff Army General Mark Milley spoke at a memorial and praised all those in the Pentagon and on the plane for believing in America.